The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back. It's Friday night, end of another week, beginning of a weekend, which I hope will be good for most all of you. In fact, I hope it'll be good for all of you, but I want to be realistic in my hopes. Some of us will not have a very good weekend, but most of us will have another chance next weekend. How's that for philosophy? Harry Cooper is with us tonight, these first 2 hours. Harry is truly one of the great historians of my lifetime and our times because he has done more to assemble the facts and the reality of various very, very crucially important parts of World War II. It is often said the winners write the story, and boy, do they. In this case, the winners, the Zionist, International Zionist Bankster Cartel, wrote the story of World War I and certainly orchestrated the hideous, inhuman Treaty of Versailles, which guaranteed World War II. They also wrote the history of World War II. We have spent many, many hours on this program trying to make it very clear that the history of World War II, as we are being taught it, and it's getting worse all the time, bears very scant resemblance to the truth of what really happened in that war. If people were asked, you go and do a man on the street, we used to call them MOS, man on the street interviews. If people were asked, who is the most evil human being that has ever walked the planet? Probably the majority with ease, and maybe even the vast majority would say, without question, Adolf Hitler. And if you were to ask them why, they would say, the Holocaust. And that would be the length, breadth, width, and depth of their intelligence and their knowledge, because they have been brainwashed their entire lives. Adolf Hitler was a human being, just like me, just like you, just like anybody else. Geopolitics and the world as it was thrust him into a position of prominence that gave him the chance to literally change the face of modern Western civilization as we know it in ways that few could even imagine. They ran out of time. The German nation, the German people, those here in the United States, which, by the way, the majority of Americans wanted nothing to do with war in Europe, those in England who wanted nothing to do with the war in Europe, and many around the world, the majority around the world, could see Soviet, Zionist, Jewish, Marxist, Communist, Socialist, Bolshevism running the Soviet Union and destroying the lives of tens upon tens of millions of human beings, perhaps 100 million people. We don't know for sure. We do know, however, that the winners write the story. And the story of World War II bears virtually no resemblance, in terms of Adolf Hitler and what we know about him, to Adolf Hitler, the man. And so what I thought we'd do something different, would be to take a couple of hours and have Harry Cooper and our special guest, David Dees, who does this absolutely brilliant art. He put up the piece together, which I have posted, which shows Adolf Hitler as a human being, not as a two-horned monster. This is an extraordinary picture, and it does give you an idea of how you have been lied to. Now, I'm not here to tell you or to try to sell you on the idea that Adolf Hitler was a saint, an angel, a savior of the planet, or anything. I'm just trying to tell you that you know nothing about Adolf Hitler, the man. Nothing. You actually know nothing about Winston Churchill either, and very little about many of the other characters who supposedly led the West to its great victory over the evil National Socialists in Germany. It's a very, very sad story of massive brainwashing that has gone on for 60 years plus, and it's not going to change. They're teaching Holocaust history now in primary schools around the United States and in Europe, and it's only going to continue to get worse. No one defends the Holocaust, whatever it really was. No one defends picking up hundreds of thousands of people, maybe a couple of million, putting them in work camps, otherwise displacing them, taking their possessions. That's not okay. That doesn't work for me. But to lie about something and then capitalize on it and make trillions of dollars on it ultimately doesn't work for me either. Now, somewhere in between there is the truth, and it's up to you to try to figure that out. Harry, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, I heard your whole intro.
Did it make any sense?
I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm listening.
You are always listening and learning and teaching. That's the important part. You've seen the picture we put up on the homepage that David Dees put together?
No, I don't have my computers on at this.
Okay, it's a nice collage of Mr. H showing him in rather human behaviors because he was a human being. In fact, tell our listeners, you had something to say. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say any art that comes from David Dees is worth looking at.
It certainly is. What we have here is a story to tell tonight, and it's a story of omission. It's one of the biggest lies in history, the lie of omission, the lies about Hitler, the man, the human being, which, again, most in the West know virtually nothing about. In the work you do with your brilliant Shark Hunters organization and all the wonderful magazines you put out and the books, of which David Dees has done the covers for recently. He's still working on them. Just extraordinary art and more extraordinary history in those covers. You must be as frustrated as anyone can be about the manicuring and manipulation of the media and the message and the portrait of the man that we know so little about.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating when... When people ask what do? I tell them I'm a historian and one of the probably the world's leading expert on the German U-boats and on Hitler's escape to Argentina. And of course, right away they think I'm a lunatic. Everybody knows Hitler committed suicide in the bunker.
Of course,
that's what they were taught. And right away just not so much anymore. But in the earlier days, they'd ask me if I was a Nazi. And so I'd throw it back.
They actually would ask you to your face.
Oh, yeah. Are you a Nazi? And so I'd throw it back at them, and I'd ask them, well, describe what is a Nazi. And
that ended the conversation.
Well, yeah. Then they hem and they haw, and I said, well, they finally come up and, well, you got to be a German. I tell them, well, that leaves me out. I'm an Irishman. And then they say, well, you got to love Hitler. And I tell them I've never met a man I love. I love lots of women, but never loved any men. So then they're really out the door. And
you have been through this a few times, haven't you?
Yeah. They don't think.
They're not taught to think.
That's right. They're not programmed to think. They're programmed to just believe what they're told and to ridicule anybody who has an idea opposite of theirs. You're thought to be just a lunatic because everybody knows. Well, of course, everybody knows a fat guy in a red suit comes down your chimney on Christmas Eve with a bag full of toys, too.
He doesn't?
I'm always asleep by about 9 o'clock, so
okay.
I wouldn't know.
Well, thank you. I don't want that ruined. That's my last fantasy.
Okay. I won't talk about the Easter Bunny then either.
We'll let that slide. Now, what we have to do here is to try. What we're going to try and do is peel back the cover, hiding the reality of Adolf Hitler, and at least take a look at the guy. And sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words. Maybe for you it'll be worth 1 word or 10 words or 100 words. But I've asked David if we could use. He put a whole bunch of pictures together that we are not allowed to see. The Western media is not allowed to see Adolf Hitler looking human or doing human things. You just won't find any. Now, if you do a search for Adolf Hitler and hit images, just click on images, look at the pictures. They're photoshopped subtly. Some are photoshopped rather graphically and grotesquely to make the man look like evil incarnate. Go look, do a search for that, enter images, and then look at the pictures we're going to show you tonight. Now, what we're going to show you tonight are not all publicity stunt photos. They're just casual, candid photos in many cases. So sure, some of them are posed pictures. But this is real emotion you're going to see in these pictures. These are real people. And there's a story that has never been told. It's really the greatest story that was never told. And it's the true story of Germany and World War II. We're supposed to have links under the page, top picture. With that, let me welcome our artist, David Dees, who did that little montage, the collage up on top, and real pictures of real people. David, hello and welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. I'm hemming and hawing here, ready to jump into this conversation. And I'm no expert on Adolf Hitler, but I certainly have... since I woke up about 8 years ago to World War I and World War II, what really happened, I have gone through as much, many books and as many documentaries as it takes to get a pretty good understanding of that we were severely lied to. And, I met a nice German girl. She was talking about how they teach the Holocaust to them from grade one. So, you know, how do you even combat such a programming that starts very early? In the school system. Anyway, let's talk about that tonight.
Yeah. Now, what got you, we did talk about this a little bit earlier, what got you kind of tipped in the direction I've been for a long time to just try to ask people to consider the fact that they may have been lied to just a little bit as they were growing up, and that there's a whole other side of this World War II story that they don't know about, and it really starts at the top. It starts at the top with the man that is the most evil human being ever to walk this earth. And you ask people, and they'll tell you that. I've seen polls done, and I think I've seen one or two man-on-the-street things done over the years asking that very question, and it comes back invariably, Adolf Hitler.
Sure. Type in the most evil men on the planet, and he'll certainly be in the top five. But to understand anything about Hitler in World War II, you have to understand World War I, and that Germany was the victim in that. Most people don't even know that. You never hear much about World War I, but World War II was just simply they went back to do their job, and that was the bankers wanted to destroy Germany. Germany was winning the Industrial Revolution. They're so... amazing with technology that vast expansive railroad system throughout Europe and and had great factories producing their products, and they were just happily going along their way. And the bankers just said, okay, we have to shut this down because we can't have this competition. So when they declared war on Germany in 1914, Germany, you know, nobody even invaded Germany. They declared war, but Germany just set out and just stopped everything. And within 2 years, they had won the war. And if you know about that, the Zionists went and they went to England and said, you're going to lose this war, but we will bring America in if you give us Palestine.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a very complicated, long subject. I don't know how much time we have for me to even try to explain this, but what we have is Hitler came to power after Germany was basically destroyed in World War One. He came into power in 1933, and the Zionists knew that he was going to clean house. He knew all about what they had done to Russia. The Bolsheviks they took over and killed the royal family there. With the bankers that put the money and brought all these Jews in to lead this revolution. It wasn't a revolution at all because most of these weren't even Russians. So, the Red Terror, they call it, you know, they started to kill and destroy most of Russian society, the millions that they killed. And Hitler was well aware of this. He wrote it in Mein Kampf. He wrote it. He knew what the Zionists were doing, that they when they go into a country, they take over the three power centers. They take over the media, the politics, and the banking. And that's what they had done to Germany. So when he came into power, he just said, okay, we're going to clean house. And that's when, if you type in, Judea declares war on Germany, the Jews declared war on Germany in 1933. It was on the cover of the newspapers. So this is what as soon as he came into power,
right.
What he was faced with was that the Jews were already declaring war on Germany.
They did it in 1933. It's a world Jewry declares war on Germany. I mean, it was right there.
They boycotted any German products, and if you had German products in your store, you know, the windows would be broken, or they would just come in and just wreck your place. So people were afraid to even put any product in their store that said "Made in Germany" on it at that point.
Now, Harry Cooper is standing by. Harry has done, 10 programs today, Harry? You did?
All right. Well, no, this is my third two-hour program today. We started at 10 o'clock in the morning. Of course, I've been in my office since about 2:30 this morning. You guys get my emails. And then I was on the air from 10 until noon, and then again from 3 until 5. And in between there, I'm putting more pages together in my magazine. I've got one more page to do, and it's going to get published over the weekend. Jeff, you get it.
And, wonderful magazine.
Yeah, thank you. Incidentally, if any of your listeners want a free copy, all they have to do is send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say they heard this show and they want a free copy of the magazine by email, and I'll send it right out to them. No cost, no strings attached.
That's very nice. Shark Hunters is an organization unique in the world because Harry Cooper has made it a point to honor soldiers who fought under all flags. It's not simply all about Germany. It's about American soldiers. It's even about Soviet soldiers. He is respected in Russia. He's respected all over the place, because he recognizes that all of these men were fighting for their countries. And when you talk about Germany, everyone says Nazi.
Harry, that sells paper.
Of course. Explain what the term Nazi really means, and then we'll talk more about the party itself.
Well, to my knowledge, to my understanding, that was a term coined by the British propagandists, because the Germans knew themselves as Socis, because they were the NSDAP, the National Socialist Deutsches Arbeiterpartei, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. So they were Socis. But now I have said for years that if you put a swastika and a picture of Adolf Hitler on the Manhattan phone book, you could probably sell a million copies just because of the imagery.
It's true. I used to walk by paperback book stands, and I know David used to do the same thing. If you just scan it, this was in the 80s and so forth, you'll see swastikas all over the faces of books. I mean, every 10 or 15 books, it seemed like there were, in fiction there would be a swastika. Because it sells. You're right.
It sells, yeah. And let me touch on a point you made earlier, that we're not allowed to see anything about Hitler in a positive light. That's true. And in Germany, it's a crime. If you publish anything about Hitler or the party, it has to paint them in a negative light. If you try to show nice pictures of them in Germany, it's a crime. Because they say that you're aggrandizing them or whatever, and that's a crime over there. And for some time it was a crime to deny the Holocaust, and people like David Duke, who's a friend of mine, and David Irving, etc., they are branded as Holocaust deniers, and that's a crime in Germany and now in most of Europe. And now they've passed another law. It's against the law to even question the Holocaust over there.
Imagine something of that historically enormous significance not being able to be investigated, analyzed, or researched. It is, it's a crime to do it. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, strange laws. If you raise your right arm in the so-called Nazi salute, you're going to get fined over there. You're at least going to get fined, 2,500 euros, which is about 3,200 Yankee dollars. But the dumbest thing, it's not even the Nazi salute, as it's called. It's the Roman salute. When Romans would greet each other, they would raise their right arm, hand outstretched, to show they have no weapon.
Julius Caesar.
Oh, yeah. My number one hero in the whole world, Julius Caesar. And I stuck it out through the first couple of years of boring Latin class to where we could finally get to we read Caesar's commentaries on the Gallic War.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that history.
That's a remarkable book. Okay. Hold on just a minute. We'll come right back with Harry and I and our special guest, David Dees, whose artwork is up at the top of Rents.com. And I'm going to play some clips for you that were spoken by the man who was Hitler's personal assistant for a period of 6 years, was literally his shadow, and knew an awful lot about him. Interviewed shortly before he died, I think a couple of years ago, and we'll hear some of that and some other things as well. Stay tuned. Okay, and we're back. Now, where do we go next here? This is it's such a big story. We're going to try and make it work in the next 90 minutes.
I have a suggestion.
Oh, you do you?
I do.
Go ahead.
Well, I would say that, Adolf Hitler, he wanted to be a professional artist, and he took his paintings, his architectural renderings to Vienna early on in his teens and 20s. I don't know exactly his age, but he was rejected twice.
It was right after World War One, basically.
I thought it was before World War One.
Well, he was painting all the way through. He painted into the 30s, actually. So,
Before World War One, he was rejected from the Vienna School. And then
twice.
Twice. And then he floundered around, and then when World War One started, he went in, he volunteered and went in, and he did paintings for the other soldiers.
Right.
When he was there. And But he was a very decorated war hero. He had 6 medals, and he was shot a couple of times, while other people probably would try to, you know, get away from all this fighting and stuff, he requested to be taken back to the front, and he kept going back into the war, and his position was as a runner. He would run from, you know, up to the front line and take
messages back and forth.
Yeah.
What's amazing about the descriptions that are reported about him is that he never once expressed the least bit of fear about anything. It was a very strange personality. No
right,
worry about his safety.
That,
yeah.
Right. A lot of those people that were doing that were getting killed, and he requested to go back into that position after he had been wounded. And so he got the respect of all the other soldiers. He brought people together very well, but he was not ever a politician. No one. In fact, he was a corporal, and he was not promoted because, as the sergeant made a note, was that he didn't have leadership qualities. So, you know, he was certainly not a politician, was not a leader at that point. And it was only after after World War I, when the Treaty of Versailles, when Germany basically got raped and destroyed from the Zionists, they took a huge percentage of land. They created Czechoslovakia. That was a new country. 3 million Germans were now in a different country. They took away land from Germany, and also in Poland there was another huge piece of land that divided the Germans away from their homeland. So, and in a part of France. So, you know, his whole thrust into politics or as a leader came because of what horrible things they'd done to Germany. I mean, they really had, the design was to destroy Germany, destroy the people, destroy their ability to participate in the Industrial Revolution. That's really what this was all about. You know, they'll tell you all these other crazy ideas of why World War One and World War Two started, but that's not the truth. The truth was is that they just didn't like the Germans taking over the world, in a sense. I mean, they were very talented. That's, if you were accused of anything of Germany, they were so talented they had to be stopped. That's what it was all about. So,
Harry, anything you want to add to that description? I mean, the Treaty of Versailles was without question the cruelest, stupidest, in the sense that it guaranteed another world war, but maybe that was the plan. Treaty that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the plan or not, but it certainly did bring that to the front, because Germany was just so devastated financially, politically, etc. And when Hitler was running for office, I think they had something like 60-something different political parties. And he was able to pull them together, and you saw the rallies. You know, hundreds of thousands of people, and that's what brought in a lot of the operating capital, because people had to pay to be at those rallies, and also everybody had to have their copy of Mein Kampf, which ultimately was the second biggest selling book ever in history. But something David mentioned there about Germany being partitioned off after World War One, that's absolutely correct, and that's what helped. That's what, in my opinion, actually did cause the outbreak of World War Two. We're taught that Adolf Hitler started World War Two because he hated the Jews and he wanted to be king of the world, or ruler, whatever title you want to give it, and it's just absolutely ludicrous. As far as hating the Jews, I had a friend, he's now passed away, he was a U-boat skipper, Helmut Schmuckel. He was half Jewish. So why was he driving a U-boat if he was Jewish?
Anywhere from 200,000 to 500,000 Jews served in the German military in the war.
Absolutely correct. What caused the problem was in Poland. Poland didn't exist. From the medieval days up until 1918, Poland didn't exist. And then the victorious Allies took out a pencil and ran some lines around on a map and said, okay, now this is Poland. It used to be East Prussia and Pomerania, etc., and there were tons of Germans that suddenly lived in a foreign country, even though they never moved. They were in the same home, the same business, but now they were in Poland. And the last 2 weeks in August 1939, some 450,000 ethnic Germans, Volksdeutsche, were forcibly shoved out of their homes that they had been in for generations, their businesses, their farms, their homes. They were just kicked out, and 49,000 were massacred by the German, by the Polish officials. And
most of them were the Bolsheviks who had infiltrated Poland and most of Europe trying to take it over on behalf of the Soviets.
Well, whatever the reason was, that's what happened. And Jeff, you've seen pictures. I've sent you a few of the pictures of the Volksdeutschers, the bodies, their hands tied. And so that's why Hitler had to send the people in, and Churchill knew it was coming, and that's why he warned Germany that if you come in, Britain and France are going to declare war against you guys.
There's so much to this. Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to tell you how Hitler saved Europe for almost 5 years, anyway, from the Soviet hordes. And some of you are saying, what? Hang on, and we'll tell you. Be right back with Harry and David Deese in just a minute. Once again, we know so little about Germany and the German people. All we know of is the Nazi Party and the Nazis and all that. The Germans came up with extraordinary firsts in science, in culture, in finance, all kinds of things.
Weaponry.
What's that?
Weaponry.
Oh, well, my God, the science and technology of their weapon systems were... Six more months and the world would be a much different place than it is now. The war on cancer. Hitler was the first man, the first government, the German government, to declare war on cancer. They declared war on smoking. Hitler personally was a vegan vegetarian and promoted the vegetarian lifestyle. They promoted physical fitness. These people were so far advanced in so many ways that there were other countries nearby that were, shall we say, just a little jealous of the progress that Germans made in the arts, the sciences, and especially in industry and technology, not to mention literature and music and all the rest of it. It was a giant, and it had to be taken down because it was walking away from Great Britain, so-called Great Britain. France, vive la France, and the great French resistance that didn't really exist outside of a handful of people. And don't write me emails, look at the history books, the real ones. Now, Harry, how did Adolf Hitler, however you wish to pronounce it, save Europe's ass for the better part of 5 years?
I'll defer to you and David on this one because you guys know.
Well, Barbarossa, everyone knows Barbarossa.
Yeah.
And all right, let me just do this real simply. Then you guys add what you can. Hitler had a very good intelligence agency. Excellent. Called the what, Harry? The Abwehr?
The Abwehr, which means defense.
All right.
They also had the Sicherheitsdienst of the SS, which... Sicherheitsdienst is the security service.
All right. Well, Hitler and his general staff found out that Joseph Stalin had moved approximately my sources, 4 to 6 million men up stealthily in secret to the boundaries of Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. Heavy weapons, artillery, you name it.
Yeah, he had a couple of field armies moved over there, yeah.
And the plan was that they were just about to launch a massive campaign to conquer Europe, to roll all the way to the English Channel and slaughter everything in the way. The German government found out about this, and in unbelievably short amounts of time was able to assemble three major armies and attack the Soviets before they could launch their war to smash, destroy, and conquer Europe. Now, Hitler moved, I think it's generally considered, about 2 weeks before the attack was to begin by the Soviet hordes.
Yeah, that's pretty well accepted.
And he actually, his tacticians, and Hitler from World War One, he understood a lot. The bottom line is that the German military encircled this entire massive conglomeration of men and equipment, horses, you name it, supply lines, and cut them off from the Soviet Union and prevented them from destroying Europe. This would have been a nightmare, no question about it. David, what have you read about Operation Barbarossa and the foresight of the German government to launch this war against the Soviet Union? No one ever talks about how the fact that the Soviets were about to launch a war on Europe.
Yeah, they had already done it to all their satellite states, Estonia, Ukraine, and Ukraine was still wanting its independence. And if you know it, in 1930, I don't know my dates, was it 34? The Red Army surrounded Ukraine and took all of their grain and forced them into a starvation period of 2 years, and these poor people in Ukraine were starved for 2 years, and they estimate 2 million people died.
Oh, two, so easy,
Hitler,
more.
Yeah,
but anyway,
Hitler was well aware of all the horror that the Red Army brought, and Europe was too. And here they were poised, and they'd already taken over all their satellite countries, and were getting ready to roll right into Europe, and they could have. Hitler, the Operation Barbarossa, found all these Soviet troops right on the border ready to come in. They beat them by 2 weeks because they had planned to invade Europe. So this was 1941.
And the way that the Germans did it was brilliant. They moved south and they moved north and moved quickly. The Soviets were all faced and positioned west in the direction of their attack. And the Germans were able to encircle them and just cut them to pieces, basically. I think they captured 1 or 2 million of them as POWs.
Right. They talk about how Hitler was photographed at the Eiffel Tower, that, you know, the Germans had rolled into France, and it was like it's such a horrible thing. Well, guess what? The photographs of France during the German occupation was business as usual. All the shops were open, all the people were out still, and they really liked the Germans because they knew that they were protected from the Russians, from the Soviets. That's who they were really afraid of.
That's a very good point. Harry, what were you going to say?
Well, a couple of things. First off, the Soviets were caught a little off guard by Barbarossa because one of the main things that Stalin had his spook looking for was the German military going to be buying huge amounts of sheep wool to line jackets with for a war invading the Soviet Union. They figured that they would have to have warm clothing for the troops if they were going to invade the Soviet Union. And Germany mobilized so quickly to head east that they didn't have time to even get any of this wool. And so the fact that they weren't buying making the warm clothing for the soldiers, Stalin didn't realize they were coming.
Joseph Stalin, our great ally, Uncle Joe.
Yeah,
what a wonderful monster.
I was a kid during the war years, and I remember how we all loved Uncle Joe. We were told he wasn't even a Russian, for God's sake.
Nope. No. Here's another thing about the National Socialist Party in Germany. And I've got this up. You can listen to it. Look underneath David's splash art at the top, a little montage of Hitler and human poses, which you will not see because those pictures are not allowed to be published over here in the West, as it were, by certain interests. There was an interview done with the man called often Hitler's shadow, his personal assistant, his manservant, if you will, his coordinator of affairs and events, his clothing to dinners and you name it. This man led an extraordinary life for 6 years, serving Hitler, but working with him. Hitler confided many things to him. I'm going to play a small clip of what Hitler said and how he really felt about the National Socialist Party. This is quite extraordinary. I hope it plays. Let's see.
It was exactly like this with me. I wasn't a party member. Everyone, especially the top people, had been telling me that I should join the party. And I thought to myself, well, what should I do? Finally, I said, my Führer, everyone wants me to join the party. What should I do? He looked at me and said, no, you don't need to join the party. You're a soldier. Serve me as a soldier. And then he said, you know, I may just dissolve the party altogether. Yes, that's what he said. Sorry if I digress here, but Herr Wagner once said, Adolf, and I should add that he and Hitler were on a first name basis with one another whenever they were together. But of course, just not in public. And it was exactly the same way with us. We simply called him the boss. It was never, the Führer is doing this or doing that. But of course, when there were strangers or prominent people around, yes, then of course we would refer to him as the Führer. But otherwise, he was just the boss. With the organizers, it was the same thing. That was just normal. It wasn't always the Führer or Herr Hitler or whatever. For us, he was just the boss. But back to the topic, Hitler said then, there are only Germans and no party. He really said that. It was in the city of Bayreuth when we were with Winfried Wagner, and I was perhaps just 2 or 3 meters away when he said it.
Pretty extraordinary stuff, which you never hear. And I'm glad to be able to bring that little tidbit to you, and there'll be a couple more. Karl Wilhelm Krauss, Hitler's personal assistant, relaying some of the things that he overheard with Hitler. Now, I also would like to invite you to look in the guests section at rents.com, and you'll find a whole bunch of photographs, which we're going to look at in the second hour, they're photographs of Hitler that you'll not see. No pun intended. That just kind of snuck out there. You will find them rarely, if anywhere, and I put them up also on the right-hand side of my homepage. There's a special column on real history. I want to repeat this just for the record. I'm not here, neither is David, nor is Harry, to promote anything that would be considered outrageous or outlandish. We're just trying to present the truth here, that Adolf Hitler was a man, a human being, and you just heard his personal assistant say that everything was about the German people. He never wanted Germany to suffer the humiliation, the degradation, and the near catastrophic permanent loss of its own identity, which it came face to face with in the 20s when the Bolsheviks were trying to take it over. Again, that's the big story. There's a lot to learn, and that's why real history is fascinating, and also why it's so difficult to come across and find. Okay, look in guests, the hidden Adolf Hitler photos. We'll be looking at some of those. And then take a look at some of the paintings that this very young man did. How old was he, David, when he painted? Teens and older?
Yeah, his whole life he was an artist, and really good stuff. I mean, if you know anything, if you've ever tried to draw
watercolors?
Very complex buildings, his buildings are really well done.
He's not only the buildings, but he also did very accomplished. The Madonna and Child and religious paintings as well.
Right. Nobody knows that either. Okay, hold on, friends. We'll come right back in just a couple.